With me today is Alex Alba. He's leading our customer success team at WorkPath, but he's also still very closely involved with a lot of our most exciting customers, some of the world's largest automakers, airlines, and logistics companies, for example. So we are going to talk about a very interesting topic. I think it's really our daily bread and butter. And we're going to talk about how you can predict the success of your strategy, how you know if your strategy will succeed, how you can manage your strategy execution.
Yeah, thank you, Johannes. Thanks for having me today. You really choose a topic that is at least as long with WorkPath as I am. So I'm with WorkPath a bit more than 2.5 years now. But since I started, the topic was a big one. And it's super exciting to talk about that today.
I mean, it's crazy. We talk about that a lot. How much money organizations spend on strategy, right? Just 2 weeks ago or so, speaking with one of our customers, I think it was around 24 million they gave to a tier one consultancy to develop their new strategy and to draft, I think, the first concept, how to bring this to life. But then oftentimes we experience how big of a gap there is after this great strategy that all makes sense to the actual execution. So how do you look at this, right? I think strategy, of course, strategy consulting, a lot of money is spent on that, and it's very important. It's strategic after all. But why is that such a big gap?
You're right. This is definitely something super interesting. Yeah, we all know these tier one consulting firms that make so much money with, at the end preparing slides, strategy decks for top level management, and then not actually executing them. But what is even more interesting from my perspective, if you look into the strategies of the organizations, no matter of the industry, actually, there are a lot of similarities. So, when I really run through the strategies of our customers, I realize all strategies are looking quite similar. Yeah, everyone looks about the customer. Everyone cares about their employees. Everyone want to be more digitized or look at ESG and green line targets. So what I'm trying to say is that at the end, if strategies are so similar or almost the same, it's not the competitive edge anymore. So what really matters at the end is execution. And when you then also keep in mind that so much money is spent for developing the strategies, but not for the execution, then this is even more interesting. When I also look at the research and studies made about that topic, then I realize, actually people are aware of that fact. Yeah, it's nothing that you think like, oh, I was not aware of that. Yeah. So I would say this is common sense. There's a PwC survey that states when companies really caring about their strategy execution, then they are 3 times more likely to report above target revenue growth. And also their profitability increases usually twice as much or compared to organizations that are not caring about strategy execution. Or I can also remember there is the Harvard Business School professor, Robert Kaplan. He's actually known for the balanced scorecard, but I mean, it's another goal setting methodology. But also he realizes that 90% of organizations fail to execute the strategy successfully. So execution is a topic where organizations are just at a starting point. So they're not really looked into that. Strategy is huge, execution not, and we are trying to change that now.
I think that very much reflects my experiences. If you just read a strategy, particularly if you look at the metrics, how a company defines strategic success, this looks not always as distinct and differentiated as you might expect. But of course, the way a big company with their positioning, with their brand, with their history, with their supply chains, there's a connection between what's in the strategy and what only this company can do compared to its competitors. But then still, it's strongly underestimated how important the execution is, right? So much is in these beautiful storylines and strategies that we usually then read in the business news. And again, the numbers, how strategic success is being defined, the numbers you can usually find online in investor reportings and that the managers have top of mind, maybe not necessarily the numbers that define, are we working the way we wanted to work to live our new strategy? I think that's what we're trying to get to today. There's this huge gap between financial KPIs, where you just see some kind of a business impact, and more distinct, different kind of metrics, let's just say like that, that define if a strategy is actually being executed in the right way.
One point on that one, because what the interesting thing is, what people understand, or what organizations and management understands as strategy. Yeah, what is strategy actually? Yeah, for them, quite often, strategy is top level financial KPIs. Yeah, we want to become, we want to grow 15%. We want to become twice as profitable. We want to, I don't know, yeah, really focused on financial KPIs. But from my perspective, these financial KPIs are actually just the development of the past execution, or at the end, they reflect the development of the past. Yeah. So when you use them to steer your strategy execution, this is not working, because like, I like that metaphor, you're trying to drive your car and only looking at a rear view mirror. So it's hard.
Yeah, I think that's a big difference between steering somewhere, driving somewhere, and controlling if you've actually gotten there, right? So great metaphor. I think we also use it in some of our trainings. What do we suggest instead? How can we go about this?
Yeah, the question here is, how can you predict future developments as an organization? Yeah, how can you assess how your KPIs might develop in the future? It's about getting in front of the wave. Yeah, when we talk to customers, we always realize they're just reacting instead of acting. Yeah. So at the end, what is the front window or the headlight, or now with having more autonomous driving cars, what are the sensors in your car that show you if you're driving in the right direction and if everything is fine? To stay in that picture of the metaphor. We definitely have to look about metrics and things we can measure that are better predictors.
So I think just before we started this conversation, you asked me to have some slides that we want to look at. Let's maybe move on to that part. Let's have a look at the mental model and the model, how your teams work with customers. I think the way we will talk about it also works for everyone who's just listening in through audio. But if you're following us on any platform where you can consume the video podcast, this might be helpful in addition. And yeah, Alex, please guide us through that model, and let's maybe stick to the mental model. There is certain metrics that after the fact tell you if you are successful, right? The traditional financial KPIs, but there's also other kind of metrics that help you steering. They're the front window of the car, as you just called it. So let's go through that model step by step.
Sure. So what you can see right now on that slide is we have there two pillars, and this is also our starting point. Yeah, we first want to create clarity on strategy as a first pillar, and then connect them to KPIs as a second pillar. Yeah, this can be found in most organizations already. We talked about that. Yeah, this is what organizations or management very often understand as strategy. So the good old rear view mirror.
And usually like more of a midterm horizon, right? 1 year to 3 years. And back in the days, maybe also sometimes 3 to 5 years, or depending on the industries, even a bit longer. But it's more like a mid and long-term perspective. This is the strategy, and these are the financial KPIs we will achieve or we will master based on that strategy.
Yeah, correct. And I mean, we still need them. They are required. We not get rid of them in the way we work with customers, but this is the starting point.
That's the common sense you see everywhere. Exactly.
Yeah. And then what we usually do in a second step, and this is where I would say organizations already start with stopping executing strategies efficiently, is that they try to operationalize that strategy by breaking them down into more short-term priorities. Yeah. Or also in the context of agile strategy execution, very often known as OKRs. Yeah. And these priorities are OKRs aiming to move the needle on these KPIs. There we have also sometimes other concepts like balanced scorecard is one example. I mean, there are other methodologies of goal setting, and this is also completely fine of using them. But I mean, I guess it's common sense to say like, okay, we definitely have to operationalize them, break them down in a certain way to make them more consumable.
But it's more consumable and actionable for the organization. But it's also a different kind of perspective, right? I think usually we see these driver trees or those metrical systems already break. That's the first metrics break, I would say, from business impact metrics to what's the value we actually want to and need to create, right? So if you use OKRs or any other framework, it's not just about making it more consumable and breaking it down in shorter timeframes, but what value do we create for the customer? What outcomes do we want to achieve to have that financial impact, right? So we're getting to like even one level deeper, I think you said, but here let's underline that that's the big first strategy execution gap already. Everyone can say how much money we want to make. If you ask, okay, but who's your customer? What's the value you want to create? What's the future state you create for the customer in the next 3, 6, 9 months? It already is much harder for many organizations, for many teams and leaders, right?
Yeah. Also here, I can agree. I mean, you use the term outcome already, what is for us defined as a measurable customer value. Yeah. And I would say this is the already the biggest change. Yeah. In the past, I would say, especially in the past, but we still see it in organizations, they just start with their strategy, with their KPIs, break them down into 1 or 2 years long-term projects and try to implement them. And then what you mentioned as a strategy execution gap, this is exactly what happens. You cannot assess anymore or validate, do my work on the project, on the long-term project, really have an impact of my KPIs? Because I mean, I start a project, work 12 months on it, and then I realize, oh, I'm not sure what happens now, if that adds any value or not. And maybe then you decide, okay, now we have done halfway, let's finish it. And then you realize at the end, 24 months on a project without moving the needle on the KPIs. So, and this is the biggest problem. And this is why we definitely need that layer of priorities of OKRs that measure the customer value.
Yeah. So everyone has strategy. Everyone has financial KPIs, at least most companies, you could say. That's what you find there easily. But then the first level on top of that, what value do we need to create? What outcomes do we aim for in order to drive those KPIs? That's where, if you're doing that, if you're doing that successfully, you're already ahead of a lot of other companies. But then there's even more to it, of course, right? You just mentioned initiatives, projects, day-to-day execution. That's also something everyone does. Every company has, like, obviously day-to-day work and does things. So can you explain how those three levels, best case, connect with each other?
Yeah. So the third level you mentioned already, this is then actually the operative implementation layer, sometimes I call it. Yeah. It, no matter if you say like we implement measures, we implement actions, some call it initiatives, project, doesn't matter at the end. But for us, this is the layer where actually the challenges in strategy execution occur, or a lot of these challenges occur there. Because people or teams trying to execute strategies and, for example, are not aligned. So they work in silos and create double work and not can identify synergies. They get ad hoc topics from their higher level teams or team of teams. Yeah. So and this is always friction in the implementation, the execution, what makes them less efficient. And all these execution challenges in the daily work, this is actually what we are trying to identify as early as possible in the process, because then we can see, okay, what are the metrics we have to look at, in order to see if we can change the way people do their execution.
So there's other kind of metrics, even more metrics. We don't just have financial KPIs. We don't just have OKRs, goals, rather on a short-term horizon, maybe 3 to 6 months. You're talking about metrics that define the success of your execution on a day-to-day basis.
Yep. So we sometimes call them also, we have a process for strategy execution. We not have to call that an OKR process. Yeah. So I would also say other goal setting methodologies work. It's just important that you have a process to provide people structure, because we want to change behaviors. I said, like, a lot of behaviors in teams and organizations are very output based. Yeah. Very uncollaborative, these kind of things. Uh-huh. Intransparent. Yeah. And we want to change them. Yeah. We want to make people work more outcome oriented. We want to make people work more data driven. We want to create transparency. We want to have common sense alignment. Yeah. Does not mean that you're not kind of tough discussions, but at the end, alignment towards common goals. And when we look at the process itself, we can measure several things. And we call them process metrics to identify, okay, how teams behave in the organization. And we can define, okay, what we want to improve, for example, here, based on the major challenges of the organization. For example, if we asked executives of our customers a few months ago, what are their biggest challenges in strategy execution? And the top three answers have been alignment across common goals and collaboration across teams was the first one. The second one was resource allocation. Resources are not allocated efficiently. And the third one was measuring if the actions, projects, output they implement really have an impact. Mm-hmm. And we can measure that with the metrics on our platform. Yeah. For example, just making a simple example, I can see if just one team is working on a goal or if two teams are working together on a goal. So I already can see, okay, is now more collaboration in the organization, more exchange or not? And this is what we're doing. And the good thing is we can really see huge improvements there after a pretty short time, no matter if the KPIs on top level, what is our overall goal? Yeah, we want to drive these KPIs where on these levels, it takes much more time that something happens. Mm-hmm.
So I'm always just trying to keep the listeners in mind that they're not following the video podcast. We're now looking at this model that you brought from your team. And you're basically saying it's not all KPIs, right? There's three different layers. Basically, there's a strategy and there's financial KPIs, measuring business impact, usually slowly moving. Then there's the second level where you break down a strategy where you define what kind of outcomes, what kind of value do we want to create to drive those business metrics, those financial KPIs. A good strategy obviously has the relevant information in it, so it's not too difficult for the teams to define those outcomes. And then you're saying there's the implementation, the execution layer where, teams work and execute, where teams have a lot of operative work usually as well, and that's where you suggest to look very closely. The execution process, how are people aligning themselves around those goals, how measurable are these goals, how does the execution look like? That's basically the mental model. Three levels. Mm-hmm. Three different kinds of metrics, from input output to outcomes to business impact. And I think that's the kind of metric literacy, KPI literacy that you usually need to develop in an organization if you really want to have autonomous teams, empower teams who can organize themselves to a larger extent and not just blindly execute on projects, very disconnected from a strategy or from the most important KPIs, the management, and after all, the shareholders look at.
Correct. And I mean, it's quite logical, right? Easy thing is, if we look at the most pressuring issue worldwide, probably climate change, if you reach the 1.5 degree target, yeah, you cannot assess that right now. Yeah, we can see if we are maybe moving to the right direction from the predictions people made. But yeah, what you can easily measure more short term is CO2 emission. And what you can also at the end influence is if you change in the way how you produce energy, if you change the way how you transport people, mobility, these kind of things that are your, at the end, implementation layers that you can work on, but you cannot directly work on 1.5 degrees. So you have to keep that chain closely in mind.
Yeah, a great picture. And I think if we're bringing that back to the business metrics, the world of business and your mental model, let's maybe pick one of these examples you brought here. Alignment, that's something you can measure on a daily, on a weekly, on a monthly basis. How are teams aligned? How well do they work together around shared goals and initiatives? And basically, what you indicate is that from improving alignment, you can show that this also drives ultimately business impact and financial success. But you can much earlier see already this 1 billion in additional revenues I want to make in that business unit. Am I actually getting closer? No?
Yeah, correct. And as you shared already with the audience, yeah, alignment is just one example. Yeah, I can also measure different things. Yeah, do they work more data driven? Do we have created more transparency, more focus there? Yeah, we have several metrics. We will dive into that later on, I guess. And what we then can see is when we are driving these metrics, these behaviors at the end behind the metrics, then we can gather more progress on our business outcomes and hopefully one day also more progress on our KPIs and the impact we create. And we had that at the beginning already. Yeah. Best case, when we define the right business outcomes, we can move the needle on the KPIs. Yeah. But we cannot influence the KPIs directly. So also when we realize after a certain time frame, 3 to 6 months after a cycle, for example, we reach our targets, we reach our goals on business outcomes, but we have not moved the needle on KPIs, then this is not a bad sign, but it's rather a learning that you create, that you, with the information available or the assumptions you made, they have been probably wrong or not valid enough. And made wrong assumptions, and this is completely fine because you have now just lost 3 to 6 months and can now define new priorities to move the needle of the KPIs again. And this is also interesting when you look at A/B testing from the most successful organizations worldwide. Yeah. Then you see most of the A/B tests fail. Yeah, but with just, I guess it's 90%, something like that, but just the 10% remaining, yeah, creates so much revenue and is so successful that they are super successful and best in class.
So basically, going back to the picture here again, and trying to summarize what you're saying is, it's not just about what kind of metrics do you look at to optimize, to drive strategy execution, right? It's basically saying there are certain parts of your metrics up there that are moving so slowly, you cannot directly manage them. Those are just backward-looking controlling metrics. So you need to look at the metrics that are moving faster and that allow you to course correct along the way much more frequently. And then basically, I think we can actually also attach that picture to the show notes, as well as some of the references and research papers you mentioned earlier. But basically, this picture shows like things are you cannot manage on a day-to-day basis and things you can manage. And this is where obviously leaders and teams should focus on the fast course corrects, the rear, not the rear view, rear back, but the front window of the car. It sounds obvious. So why do you think this is so difficult for organizations? Why is it that most managers can easily tell you the financial KPIs they need to win, they need to master at the end of the fiscal year or the quarter, but not so much the leading indicators?
I mean, first, there's a famous quote of Peter Drucker, you can't manage what you can't measure. So, and when I can just measure my top level, that takes a lot of time, where it takes a lot of time that they change and that they move, yeah, and that they develop, then I have to look into other measures that I can measure, yeah, more leading indicators, yeah. And this is exactly what we are doing. And there is also research that shows exactly that outcome-oriented behaviors in strategy execution drive successful execution. Yeah, for example, there's that AESG professor Klaus Möller about
St. Gallen, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They talked about behavioral controlling, yeah, how behaviors influences business success. And also we did a lot of research on the topic. Yeah. We probably also inspired from what we have seen in our data. Yeah. Because it's obvious. Yeah. But also, yeah, we want to test again what others identified already. And when you ask employees, for example, in a transformation at the beginning, yeah, how have you perceived the situation regarding transparency, alignment, empowerment, data-driven decision-making, these kind of things? And then you ask them again after a certain time, after you have changed something, and these perceptions tremendously improve, then there is a point, yeah? And this is why we try to look into the topic in more detail. As I said, it's not only about employee perception. Yeah, we also looked at data points. I would say data points in our platform are rather more accurate sometimes, because yeah, when you ask people, sometimes perception can be different to the actual status quo. But combining both is definitely one way to get a more clear picture. The data points are available, so we used them and analyzed really over 3,000 teams over 3 years, over more than 40 organizations, over 10,000 of goals. So really a huge amount of data. And we want to try to understand how these data points, yeah, that are reflecting the behaviors of people, the outcome-oriented behaviors of people, how they really affect the goal achievement of these organizations to really, yeah, at the end, I would say the picture we showed before, the connection of the three levels, yeah, process outcomes or process metrics or the operational implementation level, two business outcomes, two KPIs, yeah, how they are connected and what is the effect. And this is what we did in the study at the end.
So maybe we can make it as tangible as possible and just share a couple of examples. You say there are certain kind of behaviors in an organization, I don't know, team behaviors that this research shows drive goal achievement, drive success on your strategic goals. Maybe you can just pick a couple of examples, like what kind of behaviors seem to have the biggest impact on strategy execution.
All right. Yeah. I will not run through all of the 18, but the most important that we have seen are definitely assigning and sharing ownership. Yeah.
So you said 18 behaviors. It's that you
in total at, right? We looked at. I would say sometimes you can also express a certain behavior with several data points. So we looked at 18 data points reflecting at the end maybe 18 sub behaviors, but rather a few broader behaviors. And as I said, the most important ones that also have the biggest impact on achievements, on goal mm-hmm. achievements, have been, as I said, assigning and sharing ownership. So why? Probably because this drives accountability of people.
So that this means like a goal, a metric that has an owner is more likely to be achieved? Or what does it exactly mean, assigning and sharing ownership?
That means at the end, when you have goals, yeah, and I mean, we call them outcomes, because for us, an outcome is a measurable customer value. Best case, your goal is defined in a way that you address the customer value. Mm-hmm. And best case, your goal is measurable. Mm-hmm. So at the end, means assigning and sharing ownership is that several people owns a goal, owning a goal, and take care that this goal is achieved. Mm-hmm. And this is what I said, like, I guess this drives accountability of these people. And this is why it probably has a positive impact on goal achievement.
So it's a certain kind of a planning behavior, you could say. People are very clear what's the outcomes, what's the goal. And it's one owner for that metric, or I don't know if it's set of metrics, different owners, but clear ownership mm-hmm. On goals. It sounds, again, very obvious, but that has a significant impact on goal achievement.
Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Okay, example. Do we have more?
Yeah. Then a second behavior that we identified was committing on contributions. So like when you say like, I work on a topic or in a third customer value, and I work on that because I want to contribute to a third bigger picture. Yeah. For example, the org strategy. Mm-hmm. That also, this behavior is really committing before you start working on that, I will support you on that, and I will hopefully deliver something that helps you as well. And also that has a big impact on goal achievement, because you probably ensure that you align with the strategy, and also kind of an accountability is there. Mm-hmm.
Oh. And I think that topic of contributions, particularly on strategic goals, where usually most of the meaningful outcomes have and only can be achieved if you have cross-functional collaboration, right? It's teams from their various functions collaborating to create value. That topic of contributions and collaboration is particularly important. What we see a lot working with companies is everyone has an issue with focus. Everyone plans and plans maybe with capacity of already 120%. So it's too much. And then you realize, oh, but actually a third of my time would actually be required supporting this other team to achieve this shared goal, this shared outcome. So the more strategic a topic gets, and a little bit, of course, it also depends on organizational structures and how close teams are already structured in value streams. But the bigger this challenge gets, I think that makes a lot of sense. So we have clear ownership as one behavior that drives mm-hmm. goal achievement. We have commitment to contributions, yep. being very clear who needs what from whom, and then committing to it. You can have resources from my team. You can have time in order to achieve your goal or our shared goal. Maybe one more example. What other behaviors did your team find that have the biggest impact on goal delivery, on goal achievement?
Yeah. Another one was measuring progress with metrics. Yeah. Not just looking at output or looking at how many milestones I have achieved, but rather really using a metric like I have increased the satisfaction of a certain person by X%.
Yeah.
Or that process of time, run through time, if it decreased by 15%. So like, if you really work with a metric, that also this has a positive impact on goal achievement. Not on the short term, because on the short term, we usually realize that when teams really switching their behaviors and starting looking at metrics, then at the beginning, it's harder to achieve the goals because mm-hmm. yeah, you're not just make a tick in the box when something is fulfilled, but rather some effort is needed to move the needle on a metric. But on the long run, there's a positive impact because you get direct feedback what is mm-hmm. What works out and what not. Mm-hmm.
I think that's good to say, right? Some of those behaviors, maybe adoption in the company is a challenge, or it's a bit slower because it's not always that it has immediate results. Yeah, you as a team might not shine in the first moment because only by getting in real metrics, meaningful metrics, suddenly you have a certain kind of honesty and transparency in the room that hasn't been there yet. So interesting to look into these behaviors and how there might be those different kind of curves of adoption and maybe also change management to some extent. Yeah.
Yeah, and what one more thing I want to mention is also that sometimes there is also an interplay between behaviors. Yeah, that means you kind of say, like, when I work on that behavior, that my teams now start working with metrics, that this directly have a positive impact on goal achievement and you move your business outcomes. It's sometimes rather like when you apply one behavior connected with another one, then you can have the impact. Best example is, as I said, measuring with metrics.
Yeah.
When you define your metrics, then this behavior is fulfilled. But if you then not look at your goals anymore and not have maybe bi-weekly check-ins to also review the development of these metrics, then it's for sake. So you could also not define them. So it's not that simple. It's just sometimes there's an interplay.
Yeah. I think it's really important to look at these kind of data with a grain of salt, to take them with a grain of salt. That is one important thing. I think we all were pretty excited when you presented this study and the research after 3 years of work, basically. But at the same time, one important limitation, or at least aspect to know, is it's a combination of behaviors that has the biggest impact, right? We saw that what stuck with my mind when you presented this for the first time is like, the most successful teams can improve their average goal achievement by 35-40%, which is tremendous, looking at sometimes millions and billions of value behind those goals. But it's not just take one behavior and you'll be definitely 10% better, right? It's a combination. I think that's really important, right? We spend a lot of time also stress testing this and continuously updating the insights. Are there any other shortcomings or limitations we are aware of already we could maybe share with the audience? Because again, working with numbers, I think you always have to be very conscious of what does the data actually tell you.
Yeah, and this is also why I, when we use these numbers and metrics and do the assessment together with customers, we also look at, we always consider all numbers. Yeah, mm-hmm. There's some that are less important than some that are more important, but just looking at one single data point is always misleading. And what you mentioned already, for sure, causality is also something that we cannot validate with this research or this model, but because there are so many other input factors, or impact factors, for example, when COVID started, then everyone went digital. There are so many other situations where external factors impact your strategy execution or your results in strategy execution or the metrics. But for me, actually, it's more important that for the first time, we really have an idea what can drive our successful strategy execution. And for the first time, we really can use data for consulting a transformation, for consulting how we can make strategy execution more successful. And we not just do it by gut feeling, but really based on data. And this is, for me, most important. And therefore, we also, when we're working with customers, we show them the entire picture, look at all data points. Also, as I said at the beginning, we also ask about the perception of employees. And then the picture gets more clear and more clear. And I would say you can definitely make better decisions with that. And no matter what proportion of that 30 to 40% improvement is then based on your more effective strategy execution, you have a big asset to improve on an ongoing basis. And this is, for me, most important there.
Yeah, Yeah. So never just take one moment in time. It's always about continuous monitoring, continuous optimization, and rather managing the relative changes, right? Is alignment improving? Outcome orientation and measurability, ownership improving? You cannot say just because one cycle ownership is a bit more clear than the previous one, suddenly you're better and you'll definitely improve your goal or achieve your goals more likely, but it makes a picture. And I think that's what, again, I was very excited about to see after 3 years looking at the data of more than 3,000 teams. It's just very significant effects, right? Fair enough, causality, there's so many influence factors if a goal can be achieved or not, but the data is so clear that there is correlations and that somehow as these behaviors are kind of logical, right? It's not kind of exotic behavior that you would suddenly expect. It's measurability, ownership. I think it's pretty clear why this has a positive impact. But still taking all that with a grain of salt, I think it's good to mention that whenever we talk about data and that context. I think another limitation we discussed in the past was, does it make sense to establish these new kind of metrics? I think particularly as a software company, a platform provider, sometimes we talk with managers, with leadership teams, it's like, can this be tricked? Can this be played? Yeah. We sometimes talk about Goodhart's law. Whenever a metric becomes a goal, it ends being a good metric because people will play with it. I think I'm going to steal that metaphor. I think I read this in one newsletter last week. The picture of mice, a city that wants to get rid of mice and rats, maybe even puts a target for it and says, for every rat you get rid of, you get a price, you get some money. People will start breeding mice and rats to make money. So you're basically failing to achieve the metric of no mice in the city because you made it a goal. Do you see any problems, any limitations when introducing these kind of process metrics to a company? Could this have any like bad implications or results that you don't see coming in the beginning?
I would definitely say there is something to that for sure. But I also see it from two angles. Yeah. First, if your teams improve some of these metrics, yeah, and some of these behaviors at the end, mm-hmm. yeah. Ownership of goals, yeah, they aim for measurable outcomes, measurability. Alignment, these kind of things, yeah. Then I would say this is not bad at all, right? It's cool that they improved how they work, yeah. It's just important that they not just optimize the system they are working with, yeah. And what we realize sometimes is that there are a few people optimizing the system and just entering what is expected. But I mean, you can easily mitigate that when you just look into the system from time to time and said like, yeah, look, I see you just entered that one. What is the reason for that? And then, I mean, you have also full transparency in the system and transparency is doing the rest. And yeah, also the colleagues can see if people optimize for that. And this is, I guess, if you go for lunch and then your colleagues ask you, hey, I see you always just optimizing for that. Transparency can really mitigate a lot.
Yeah.
And the second is, it's about communication. Yeah, it's when changing your steering approach for strategy execution, it's important to address always the entire organization. Not talking about, look, this team is doing great and this team is doing bad, and that all teams start having a competition of optimizing certain metrics. This is for sure bad. Also, what I don't like is that you say like, okay, look, our goal is now to improve alignment by X percent. Our goal is now to improve that metric by X percent, or we want to have at least 90% of that metric.
At least not as a public goal where the organization would follow after.
Correct. Yeah. But rather like you said, like our goal is to execute our strategy efficiently. And what we are looking at as well, yeah, together as an organization is how we developing regarding our behaviors. And then it's also, it's about the communication then around that. Mm-hmm. And then you usually mitigate it. I would also say, in general, when everything is transparent, this is a big asset, but also critical to a lot of organizations, yeah, because they're not used to it. And then it's important also that you communicate pretty sensitive here, yeah, not say like, why are you not making any progress here, but rather like, hey, how can I support you to achieve our goals? Yeah, and it's not about your goals, it's about our goals. And when you really look at these two things and consider them, then I guess it's not a big deal.
Yeah, fair enough, right? Like any tool, like any steering mechanism, it can be misused. So I hear you saying communication, change management, the framing of all of that, mm-hmm. how you work with it is important. And I still sometimes think, like, even if people, for example, have clear ownership or update progress more regularly for the wrong reasons, just because they want to look good, it's probably still behavior that's positive for the company. Probably transparency does a good job there sometimes as well. I try to make this like as tangible as possible with examples. Can we maybe also bring some examples of companies that you work with that were successful with that approach, that introduced a new framework that lets them connect their strategy, their financial KPIs, their business metrics with a more frequent and short-term way of planning, yeah, defining outcomes and metrics that define sort of kind of the customer value teams are driving, but then also looking at those process metrics, those behavior metrics of teams to drive strategic progress. Can you share any examples?
Yeah, sure. One example where we also wrote a case study about is DB Schenker. Yeah, they are working with OKRs for more than 3 years now, and we could see that there was a constant improvement of OKR progress over these years. In total, it was about 16% from between after the onboarding in within 5 cycles, something like that, two years, something like that. And what is interesting of these 16% improvement, yeah, it's not about that the entire organization improved 16%, but the 16% more goal achievement is rather related to the teams that also started early and then did all of these 5-6 cycles in the 2 years. Mm-hmm. Means the more major these teams get, the more goal achievement they also reach. Mm-hmm. And this was super interesting. Yeah.
And by the way, right, I think we always have to remember those are global companies. So 16% average improvement on strategic progress, on goal achievement might not always sound big, but behind that, there are oftentimes programs or goals worth hundreds of millions or billions of euros. So it's quite significant. The kind of numbers that are behind that, if you put a dollar or euro value on it.
Yep. Exactly. 1 million, it's 160K. 10 million, it's 1.6K, and so on and so forth. Just calculated upwards. It's a huge effect. But what I want to also share is it's not only about goal achievement that have improved by a certain amount, 16% we said. Also, when we look at the perception of employees at DB Schenker, yeah, regarding strategy execution, have we created more transparency? Is our team better aligned, or is our organization in general better aligned? Do we have more focus now? Yeah, we also see huge improvements there. And same applies as well for the process metrics we can measure in our platform. And for me, when you look at these three things separately, yeah, goal achievement on the one hand side over the cycles, mm-hmm. employee perceptions that we assess via a survey over the cycles, and also last but not least, the process metrics, then you lay these curves on top of each other. One may be a little steeper for sure, but they are all point upwards. And this is for me a clear sign that there is an effect of a better process on the goal achievement. And I guess we can also put that case study in the show notes.
Yeah.
They can also see the perception of employee, how they change, what people, how people talk about the new process, what changed over time. And then with the effect of 16% in mind, I guess this is a cool approval.
Yeah, it's a great result. Again, talking about shortcomings or maybe the less obvious effects, because I think this company, you and their leadership, you do share some of those numbers as a feedback towards the organization, right? So people in the organization know certain kind of behaviors are expected and we are improving with these kind of behaviors. So do you see like a sort of like a kind of a feedback loop between organizational behavior and those kind of metrics, or just teams getting used to the process? Is this maybe also just an upward trend and improvement because, I don't know, teams become more realistic in their planning, plan for goals and outcomes that are more likely to be achieved? How do you think about that?
Maybe. It's hard to say that 100%. It's, once again, it's causality. There are so many factors. But for me, this is actually less important. Yeah, because when teams can achieve what they have planned in the strategy, yeah, or when an organization can achieve what they have planned in their strategy, then this is completely fine because, yeah, you have planning accuracy. Yeah, you can really, you can promise something to the shareholders, to the stakeholders, and you can really achieve what you promised them. And I mean, the stock market loves you when you stick to your promises. Critical for me is rather over-promising and underachieving, but not delivering what you promised and what your targets are.
Yeah, predictability in itself, of course, has a value. And I think with the model you're sharing today, if you increase the frequency in which you're planning and course correcting, this can also be renegotiated on an ongoing basis, right? If you see, like, we might have a 3-year strategy, and every 3 to 4 months you're reevaluating, you can also constantly calibrate on the level of ambition and how high you aim with goals. So I think that's a fair argument as well there. So we're coming to the end. We're coming to some rapid fire questions for Alex, questions we ask all of our guests on the podcast. But before we do that, I would like to invite you to the Corporate Strategy Execution Forum. It's a great event on March 21st to 22nd this year. It's in Amsterdam, but parts of it, some sessions can also be watched online. And if you are a part of our community as a listener of this podcast, you can get a free ticket. You can just send us a short email to podcast@workpath.com. And maybe you can just share a couple of thoughts about the process metrics Alex explained today. Maybe you pick your favorite, the most helpful, the most relevant process metric, behavioral metric we shared that has a relevant impact on strategy execution. And we will, out of these mails, select one person to get a free ticket for the Corporate Strategy Execution Forum in March 21st, 22nd in Amsterdam or online. That's it with the promotion. Again, great event and hope to see some of you guys there. Let's close this conversation with some rapid fire questions. Are you ready, Alex?
I hope so. Hopefully.
We talk about books. What are some books that you recently read and that you would recommend that might be relevant for the audience?
To be honest, since we have podcasts, the amount of reading has declined for me as well. I guess a lot of people experience that. But one book I recently read is just kind of connected to strategy execution. It addresses the topic of how our society can become more sustainable. So it's definitely something, a strategic target for everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also about strategy execution in a way that it explains how we can deal with climate change, what needs to change in our society. It's a German book called Die Welt neu denken from Maya Göbel. She's a transformation researcher. Super interesting book. I can highly recommend that.
Of course, we'll put that into the show notes as well. So we mentioned podcasts. What are your favorite podcasts? Any podcasts that you would recommend?
There are so many great podcasts. But the ones I recently listened to is definitely the Doppelgänger podcast, the OMR podcast. I also like Kassenzone and Energiezone. I listen to some podcasts on AI. In general, I would summarize that everything about building business organizations, analyzing the latest market trends is actually what I like.
All right. Where can our listeners connect with you? Where can they find you and engage with you?
LinkedIn is definitely a good place to get in touch with me or just read my thoughts. I recently started to post also all my learnings regarding strategy execution there. And happy to have fruitful discussions there.
All right. And then last question already. We don't just have the Outcome Economy podcast. We also building the Outcome Economy community, connecting leaders, connecting organizations who want to become more outcome oriented, who want to learn from each other and work together to define and achieve their goals. And of course, we're also always interested to meet those people and to invite them to our events, to invite them on the podcast. So maybe you have someone you would like to suggest for one of the upcoming episodes.
I'm not sure if I can suggest a certain person or drop a certain name, but for me, it would be most interesting to listen to to C-level from big corporates, big organizations that are currently facing major challenges in their strategy and in their execution. And I wanna just listen to them and learn how they wanna make it work or what their challenges are. I mean, there are so many efficiency programs ongoing. We are facing a skilled labor shortage. We have events like COVID. We have events like problems in the delivery. And these corporates are directly affected by that and are in these huge transformations. So talking with the responsible people, how they want to make it work, would be super interesting.
All right. We'll be working on that. Thank you very much. That's it for today. Alex, thanks for being here with me today. And of course, also thanks to our listeners. Thanks for spending your time with us and hope to see you soon.
Thanks for having me.